Well, Dan Finotti, I am appearing on behalf of plaintiff appellant Kyle. Now, this case is one which has a question of duty. We have a chain of traffic accidents. First one caused by defense steward's negligence in striking a vehicle and the other vehicles behind her to stop and try to avoid her. Defendant Tibbett struck a vehicle in front of him. Plaintiff Kyle came to a stop, but the car behind her did not. Well, it did after it hit her. And that was driven by defendant Mackey. The question is, do defendants Stewart and Tippett share in any responsibility, liability, for causing this traffic jam and this crash? Now, the trial court granted motions for summary judgment, and which actually the order for granting motion for summary judgment came in before depositions were possible or depositions were taken. The order was that the defendants Tippett and Stewart owed no duty to plaintiff Kyle. Now, a number of traffic statutes were brought up on appeal in the opening brief because these show that, according to the General Assembly, drivers in the position of defendants Tippett and Stewart do owe a duty to driver motorists in the position of plaintiff Kyle.
Counsel, let me ask you about that, if I can. My understanding is there were three different accidents that occurred, what about 1.2 miles apart or something?
Yeah, something. I think it was a little over a mile.
Okay, and that defendants Tippett and Stewart's vehicle never collided, was not involved with plaintiff Kyle's vehicle. Is that also right?
Yes.
So what is the duty and what kind of a special relationship would exist then when we're talking about a 1 point something mile, three different accidents, and they never touched, their vehicles never touched? What's the relationship between the plaintiff and the defendants in this case to cause a duty?
The relationship is simply that they are both motorists taking that road. Their relationship is that they're both drivers on the road, and the drivers still have a general duty of care not to.
Well, is it a general duty or is there a special relationship that's required in this context?
The special relationship, if the court requires more than the just happenstance of sharing the road, the special duty or special relationship does not exist beyond that, beyond the defendants signing the certificate to get their driver's licenses and piloting their motor vehicles onto the same highway.
Are there any limitations, yes, in this duty or this relationship that you're saying we have as motorists? I mean, certainly somebody that's driving in Colorado Springs is not necessarily going to have the same kind of duty that they have to the people in front of them and behind them than they would for some, you know, to somebody that's 2 or 3 or 4 miles ahead.
Yes, that is curious, yet it is possible, it is foreseeable that by stopping traffic, other motorists may strike other motorists. A division of this court in Benai held that, let me get the cipher, Benai, it's in the brief, it's 799 P. 2nd 441, Benai v. Arruda, where two people who are operating motor vehicles collide. A pair of sheriff's deputies are dispatched to go to the scene. One leaves, one remains behind at the scene. Then two other motorists approaching collide with the sheriff's deputy's car, injuring the deputy. The question then was, were the drivers of the original two cars responsible, or did they share responsibility for the injuries to the sheriff's deputy? The Court of Appeals held that the trial court erred when it granted an order for summary judgment, that there is a question of fact. If the cause is terribly remote, we need the finder of fact to say that, and that the finder of fact needs to see the evidence, and so we have to go to trial and not have summary judgment.
And it would possibly make sense if we're talking about a multiple car accident. Part of the problem I'm having is the fact that you have three events, and there's no connection, or there's no contact, physical contact, between the Kyle vehicle and the Stewart vehicle for sure, but not even with the Tippett vehicle. So at what point is that foreseeability removed, or that special relationship different than the relationship you would have with the person behind you and in front of you?
Well, the relationship that drivers have towards each other when they are piloting vehicles down a highway is one that requires them to not take actions that do not injure other drivers on that highway. You're sharing the road. That is the relationship. It's not a written relationship. It's not it's not a written specific relationship. The writing, when you sign for your driver's license, provides that you are to comply with the, I don't know if it's specifically state statutes, but laws in effect, that govern when you can go, when vehicles can enter or cross intersections. These things you have agreed to comply with. When you get your license to drive, or if you're driving without a license in any state.
Let me switch to the causation just for a moment. What did the defendants do specifically in this case that caused a personal injury to the plaintiff?
The defendant, Stewart, by striking the car next to her, what facts actually happened with defendant Stewart, I do not know. I have not had an opportunity to review any depositions in this case because the case was quashed before we were able to answer those questions. So I don't know if I would, well, I cannot postulate what happened. I don't know, and I'd like to.
Okay.
Now, judges, I will reserve the rest of my time. Unless you have any other questions.
You may reserve the rest of your 2 minutes and 54 seconds for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Andrew Lavin, bar number 41240, and I represent Mr. Tippett in this matter. Mr. Watts will be providing an argument for Ms. Stewart. We ask that time stop for around 7.5 minutes so we can switch positions.
It's up to you to keep track of your time, but you may switch.
We ask that you affirm Judge Crowder's April 20th, 2012 order granting Mr. Tippett's motion for summary judgment. Based on the record that was presented to the court, it found two independent reasons for dismissal of claims against Mr. Tippett. First, the court found that Mr. Tippett did not owe his title of duty. And second, it found that Mr. Tippett was not the cause of Ms. Kyle's damages. This court can affirm on either independent reason. The issue on appeal today is whether the trial court erred on the record that was presented to it on the motion for summary judgment. Most of the arguments plaintiff raises today, or in the appellate briefs, were raised for the first time on appeal. This court did not consider them. Now, the court has a basic understanding of the facts, and I won't belabor them. There's an accident, 3/4 mile down the road. Mr. Tippett is involved in the accident. About 1/4 mile down the road, Ms. Kyle is rear-ended by defendant McKee. Multiple cars are between each accident. Three separate police officers arrive, investigate the separate accidents, and issue different reports. The first issue we're here to discuss today is duty. Plaintiff did not contest the issue of duty at all in her brief response to Mr. Tippett's motion. Nonetheless, the issue of duty, what needs to be decided is whether this defendant owes a particular plaintiff a duty, and this is a question of law. Is it a decision of fairness under contemporary standards, whether reasonable people would believe a duty exists?
Counsel, how do you address your opponent's contention that by virtue of, you know, being on the road, on the same road, that these motorists owe each other some duty of care not to violate, I guess, any traffic laws or regulations, and that therefore that gives rise to this this duty, regardless of whether, you know, two cars are proximate.
Metropolitan Gas Repair case and the Taco Bell case have stated various factors of court as to weigh when determining whether there's a duty. One of the factors is a special relationship. Typically, the special relationship cases are non-abusance cases, and they recognize special relationships such as an innkeeper and a guest, an employee and an employer. Here, there's just two drivers. There's never been a finding that two drivers have some sort of special relationship. If there is, and almost any individual out of society has a special relationship with another individual. Just because someone gets in a car and drives to work and another person is going to a restaurant doesn't mean there's some sort of special relationship between the two of them. In addition, the other factors that are to be considered is the social utility of the defendant's act. Here, everyone agrees that driving trucks is good for society. Move goods and people help society. The other factor that's briefly discussed is foreseeability of the harm. The Prentice case states that instruction which was given that said one has no reason to believe another person will commit a violation is a proper instruction. People aren't supposed to reasonably believe other people will be in accidents. Accidents are fortuitous events that people don't intend to occur. Mr. Tippett had no reason to believe that there would be another accident. And foreseeability is also just a factor. The key factor that needs to be balanced is the magnitude of the burden placed on the defendant if a duty is created. Here, what plaintiff proposes is a huge burden. Plaintiff can't even define a line for where this duty ends. But it doesn't even state whether it only ends in bodily injury cases. This duty under plaintiff's theory could potentially impact someone who misses an important business meeting or isn't able to get to sign a contract in time or can't get to the hospital to treat an injury. This duty is, that they propose, is immense, perpetual, and it does not end, whether it's 100 feet, a mile, and so on.
Would you concede that there's at least a duty with respect to the proximate cars? I mean, there's certainly a presumption that if somebody hits you from behind, that that person was following too closely.
Yes, Your Honor. I would concede that one has a duty to someone who is directly involved, directly impacts your vehicle, or takes a contemporaneous, almost immediate reaction due to some action. For instance, the Bonnyana case that plaintiff cites for the first time in the reply brief is a case where an investigating officer shows up to investigate a particular accident. It's reasonable to believe that an officer will investigate a traffic accident you have. That officer was directly involved in that accident, and that is why the court overturned the summary judgment. Interestingly, there was also a second accident involved in that case, comparable to Mr. Tippett's second accident in this traffic jam. And the court found the trial court did not err in not finding cause. Those facts couldn't be any more similar. Here, the investigating officer investigating the first accident, second accident not the cause of her injuries. Similarly, a traffic jam developed because of the first accident. Mr. Tippett's accident, no one can say but for it, Ms. Cal's accident wouldn't have occurred. It's directly comparable with the Bonnyana case. There, and what's important on the causation issue is the trial court took the record in front of it, acted as the finder of fact, and found that reasonable minds couldn't disagree on causation. This court would have to find that that was a clearly erroneous finding to overturn its finding of fact based on the undisputed facts presented to it.
Why isn't causation a question of fact, especially in a situation where apparently, the plaintiff was interested in conducting some discovery?
The plaintiff states that she was interested in conducting discovery. This case was at issue in September. The plaintiff's response brief wasn't until April the following year. Defendant conducted written discovery. Nothing held plaintiff facts when conducting depositions. And plaintiff did not meet the requirements under CRCP 56F. to ask for additional discovery. There is no affidavit filed stating what additional discovery needed to happen. Still, in the appellate briefs, there's no request for what needs to happen and how it would help make this decision. But causation is often a question of fact, unless reasonable minds can't disagree. And here, Mr. Tippett did not cause a traffic accident. The record in front of the court stated that traffic had come to a standstill before his accident. His accident didn't make traffic come to any more of a standstill. It was already at a standstill. I see that I've approached the end of my time, and I will let Mr. Foss continue to that argument.
You may do so. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
It's on the Ralph L. Carr Justice Center and Supreme Court building. There has been a tornado warning issued by the city and county of Denver until 2:45 p.m. today. Please move away from windows to the center of your offices for your own safety. Please remain inside the building. Again, there is a tornado warning issued for the city and county of Denver until 2:45 p.m. today. Please move away from windows and into the center of your office area and remain in the building. Thank you.
That's not something we've practiced.
Yeah, we normally don't get those. But once the sirens stop, you may proceed. And I think we should be safe since we're just surrounded by books.
Thought I threw my voice for a second. Michael Watts, 41375. I presume I have until 2:45 now,
yes,
since we have a tornado on.
Absolutely. We're not going to take away from your time.
I represent defendant Shannon Stewart in this case. And like Mr. Ladd explained, simply ask that this court affirm the trial court's grant summary judgment for defendant Stewart. In the briefing below, defendant Stewart argued for summary judgment on one basis, that she does not owe a duty to a driver who is nearly a mile behind her, who's involved in an accident almost 10 minutes later. The court considered that. Plaintiff argued nothing regarding duty in response to the motion for summary judgment. Summary judgment was granted. Duty, the existence of a duty, is simply a question of fact for the trial court to resolve.
You mean law?
Thank you. It's only a question of law for the court to decide. And with no finding of duty, the remaining elements of negligence need not even be addressed. In this case, the arguments advanced by defendant Tippett seem to apply even stronger for defendant Stewart. She's even further away from the plaintiff's accident, the plaintiff's vehicle. More time has elapsed between defendant Stewart's accident and Ms. Kyle's accident. Ms. Stewart's vehicle left the roadway entirely and rolled on the side of the road during her accident, which occurred approximately 10 minutes before Ms. Kyle's accident. So immediately at the time of Ms. Stewart's accident, she's no longer on the road. So the arguments advanced by defendant Tippett seem to apply even stronger, and the problems in plaintiff's argument that there is a duty here also seem to apply even stronger given the time and distance between these vehicles. To address the court's question regarding general duties owed by drivers on the road simply by being on the road with other motorists, I think we can look to foreseeability in this particular case, that it's not foreseeable that a motor vehicle accident involving a vehicle leaving the roadway entirely is going to cause an accident approximately a mile away. And I think the questions posed by the court have illustrated that it's difficult to put any sort of limitation on this duty, and suddenly we have a boundless duty of all drivers owing duties to other drivers, possibly crossing county lines if you're backed up long enough on I-25. And like Mr. Lavin argued, there's conceivably no limitation in causes of action either. It's not necessarily a personal injury problem. It could be that someone misses an important meeting someone's late for argument at the Court of Appeals, that could conceivably give rise to a duty in that situation, and that's just unmanageable. With that, I think I'd like to rely on a briefing, unless the court has any questions.
You may do so. Any rebuttal?
Briefly, judges, the question of foreseeability, that it was just stated that it was not foreseeable that one accident, defendant Stewart striking the vehicle, would cause another accident. That, I would argue, is foreseeable. That is why the trial court was, presented before the trial court was an affidavit by an investigator, that one witness had overheard a first responder there say, we have to get these vehicles cleared off the highway before there are more accidents. That sounds like this fireman foresaw other accidents happening if the debris was not cleared off the roads and the roads returned to operational.
Counsel, is the trial court allowed to consider hearsay either in support of or in opposition to a summary judgment motion?
That is a good question, and it is hearsay at that point, because the court has not allowed the time to have depositions and turn this from a conclusion by an investigator into actual admissible evidence.
But that, Mr. Fanati, even without depositions, couldn't you have obtained an affidavit from the police officer directly as to what his opinion was?
I believe that the identity of the officer was not yet established. But you're right, Judge, if we have the identity of the officer, they can be asked whether they made that statement. It's just not, it's foreseeable. I don't think this officer was having special abilities. He was clairvoyant that he foresaw an accident. Judge, my time is up. I would ask this court to remand this case for further discovery or remand for trial. Either one's going to happen if this case goes back.
Thank all counsel for your fine arguments today. This case is deemed submitted, and you may expect a written opinion in due course.